This is the Voice of America's worldwide coverage of the flight of Apollo 16, man's fifth landing on the moon. Today, the descent and landing on the lunar surface by astronauts John Young and Charles Duke aboard the landing craft Orion. Astronaut Ken Mattingly will remain alone in the command ship Casper, orbiting above the moon. Casper and Orion have undocked and are going through a series of maneuvers that will prepare the lunar lander to touch down in the Descartes Highlands at 20 hours 41 GMT as scheduled, which would be about 20 minutes from now. At 98 hours into the mission, we take you to VOA space correspondent Rhett Turner at the Manned Spacecraft Center at Houston for his description of late events.
While we're watching the countdown clock, 13 minutes until ignition is due on the lunar module Orion, and John Young and Charlie Duke begin that descent for touchdown to the moon. This is what's called PDI, Powered Descent Initiate, PDI, 12 minutes 51 seconds from right now as the clock is ticking down. At that point, the main rocket engine on the descent stage of the lunar module is to fire. The thrust of this can be changed constantly as John Young, with his hands on the throttles and on the guidance system, begins the 12-minute descent. Here's Apollo Control.
We are going around at least one more rev before attempting the power descent initiation for Lunar Module Orion. Ken Mattingly in Command Module Casper encountered some problems in preparing for the service propulsion system burn for the circularization maneuver. Seems that a secondary circuit on the thrust vector control system apparently did not come up to specifications. So the circularization burn was aborted, and we have a wave off. We'll stand by for the remainder of this frontside pass as a new circularization burn maneuver is calculated, and troubleshooting continued for Ken Mattingly and his problem aboard Casper.
Well, we've just gotten the word from Apollo Control that because of a rocket thruster control problem on the command ship, Casper, as Ken Mattingly calls it, that the descent and touchdown will be delayed for one revolution. That means another hour and a half, then, before that final descent and touchdown to the surface. Let me explain what happened there. Casper, or the command module, is supposed to fire its service propulsion system rocket engine just at about the time of power descent initiation in order to circularize, or to put the command craft into an exactly circular orbit. This is a standby or rescue orbit should the lunar module get into trouble on its way down and have to come back up and rendezvous in a hurry. This is the way home. This is the mother ship, Casper. As Ken Mattingly said, he had problems with the thrust vector control system with a circuit on this. It didn't look the way it was supposed to look just before he was about to fire his rocket. Therefore, this circularization burn was aborted or put off, and using a flyer's term, Orion now has a wave off for landing. Go around the field and land again, or actually go around the moon and land again. All of these men are aviators, and they and the men in mission control use aviation terms constantly. You may have heard those throughout the whole space program. So Orion will be at least 1.5 hours later than expected in making that descent and touchdown to the moon. At this point, there would be no reason to believe that this would affect the normal first excursion of the moon, because that is a number of hours away this evening, United States time. Such things as this are thought of during the planning for a mission like Apollo 16. There are extra bits of time allotted for just such things if they are needed. For instance, the descent and touchdown was scheduled now, and after touching down on the surface, the astronauts would have some 4 hours or more to prepare for the first lunar excursion. Well, you can take at least 1 hour and a half of that away now. There have been a number of small problems today with equipment systems on board the lunar module, particularly which had to be checked out, verified, and given a go before commitment to land. When John Young and Charlie Duke climbed aboard this morning, they fired up all the systems and then backed away, disconnected from the mothership, both of them there together, relatively close in lunar orbit, in about a 100... No, I beg your pardon. They were in an elliptical orbit. Last night, earlier, the command module went from a circular orbit down to a low sweep across the landing site, some 10 miles above it, as a matter of fact. And it was during this low front pass orbit, and then swinging high on the back of the moon, that the lunar module was disconnected. In effect, the mother ship had helped the lunar lander in part of its descent. It had taken it down from 100 kilometers above the moon down to about 15 kilometers above the moon, and the lunar module is still in that orbit. So is the command craft at this point, since he could not circularize or move his orbit back up to a circular 100 kilometer orbit. The lunar module will go around again, and when it begins to come down to that 15 kilometer height above the surface in an hour and a half from now, then possibly all of the equipment systems can be configured and checked out again for a safe descent with the mothership where it's supposed to be for rescue maneuvers, should they be necessary. Let's listen. Here's Charlie Duke in the lunar module. Let's see what he's saying.
+045 -048A. And the initial numbers were the same as on the data card book.
Okay, beginning, here's the readback, beginning at 540, -008, plus
now these
001.
These are numbers being given by Mission Control from tracking information to the lunar module to tell Duke and Young how to program their computer for the next hour or so of events, at least for this next pass around the backside of the moon.
RCS situation, we suspect that the burst disk went on the backside. We'd like to make sure that the system A pressure, when the source pressure in system A gets down to 500 psi, we'd like you to close off system A. Over.
Roger.
That was John Young saying roger, replying there. We're not hearing conversations with Ken Mattingly because another flight controller in Mission Control is talking to him. That's where our problems at the moment lie, however. We're hearing the Mission Control and lunar module talk to each other.
2400, and that was where it was before we started getting those RCS lights. The pressure never has gone above about the 205, 210 maybe.
Here we copy.
He's talking about a pressure light on his reaction control system thrusters in the lunar module. Going back to what I was about to say a few minutes ago, when Duke and Young climbed into the lunar module this morning, there was some trouble difficulty for the first, some minutes in locking on the landing radar. Quite possibly it has been decided this was because the spacecraft was going across a very low pass across the front side of the moon, down to within as close as 15 kilometers, possibly even closer to some of the peaks reaching up below, and the radar was just not properly responding because of the low altitude. We've heard this as one explanation, or at least an improper altitude for its landing cycle, I'll put it that way. Then there was some difficulty in properly aligning or getting the high-gain antenna, the dish antenna pointed toward Earth on the lunar module. And it was decided and announced by the engineers that this would not, however, prohibit a landing. There are several more omnidirectional antennas which can be used for descent and touchdown, and for communications from the lunar lander Orion. Also, the necessary data information, high-speed data as it's called in this case, can be transmitted on the Omni antennas and picked up by the big 200-foot dishes at Goldstone, California, by one at Parkes, Australia, and at least properly interpreted for the Mission Control to have adequate monitoring information during a descent and touchdown without what's called the high-gain dish antenna. It was just not cycling or following in its in when it was in its automatic mode. It's believed that this was stuck in a stowed position and didn't quite come unstuck. I haven't heard a follow-up announcement on whether they got it relieved or not up to this time. So, ordinarily, it would be only 3 minutes to ignition for a powered descent and touchdown on the moon by the lunar module. The static you can hear in the background is caused when the lunar module...
Jim, give me a call when you want us to go to Antomni.
He's talking about switching on the antennas. That particular static is caused by the high-gain antenna drifting out of position, drifting out of alignment with the Earth. We've come to learn just from listening to these signals what that indicates in transmissions from the moon. It would have been 2 minutes until powered descent. However, let's add 1.5 hours to that, because Orion has been waved off, landing on the surface of the Cayley Plain in the Descartes Highlands, at least for one more revolution of the moon.
Transponder on.
That was John Young calling.
Okay.
The landing has been postponed for at least one revolution.
We're going to try our radar lockup here, too, again.
That's John Young. He's going to test that radar lockup system again as he passes across the landing area. The antenna drifts off, and so we hear some static. The problem is in Casper, the command ship. Ken Matting reported a problem in his SPS, or service propulsion system, circularization maneuver. The thrust vector control system did not look proper to him, so the circularization burn, in other words, a firing of the main rocket, which would raise him back up into a circular orbit around the moon, has been put off temporarily. And this is called for in the mission planning after disconnecting the lunar module and allowing it to be in a low pass across the surface to make landing a little easier. The mothership is supposed to go back into a higher circular orbit into what is called a rescue capability mode. And if Mattingly can't fire his rocket properly or doesn't believe it's configured yet to do so, then the mothership would not be in its proper place should an abort of this landing by the lunar module be necessary. I believe that high-gain antenna has drifted right out of sync with the Earth now.
Okay, Orion, let's go low bit rate.
Switching from high data bit rate down to low bit rate.
This is Apollo Control. Here in Mission Control, all of the... considered for the current situation in which the thrust vector control portion of the stabilization and control system, which in turn controls the firing and gimballing of the service propulsion system engine, is being mulled over. The other options would be rendezvous over the next couple revolutions and possibly using the descent propulsion system aboard Orion for injecting the spacecraft back into a trans-Earth trajectory. Over the next several hours, this consideration should sort itself out.
Bit rate again.
That was Terry White, our voice of Apollo Control. He, as you heard, he was saying that they're just studying the situation now to try to give Ken Mattingly and also the people watching the systems on the command module a bit of time to study this thrust vector control system. This is part of the guidance and navigation system, which makes sure that when the main rocket or even the small thruster rockets are fired in navigational maneuvers aboard the command module, that the spacecraft is oriented in the proper direction, that you do have proper navigation, especially during these powered maneuvers by the rocket systems. Otherwise, you're not going to go where you want to go, obviously. So everybody's studying it. We can see a little conference in Mission Control. The flight director, Jerry Griffin, is meeting with some of the command module systems people. They're all standing around their desks and their consoles. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, about 8 of the flight controllers are standing, talking to each other, discussing the situation. Here's Apollo Control.
37. The current situation in Apollo 16 is a wave off. That is another revolution before attempting a landing.
Flight scan's trying to call you.
However, as mentioned earlier, other options are being looked at. In case the troubleshooting on the command module, command service module, stabilization and control system fails to pan out to where the circularization burn or any other service propulsion system burns could be conducted successfully.
That's Terry White, the voice of Apollo Control, over in the Mission Control Center with the rest of the flight directors and engineers, flight controllers. He's trying to give us an occasional report on this problem as he is trying to listen to what they're saying and what they're discussing. We are allowed to visit Mission Control from our broadcast position through closed-circuit television. We can see on a color television camera the men moving about in the control room having their discussion. The same type closed-circuit color system, television system, which is used here during the lunar surface operations, in which we all share, both the mission controllers, the flight directors, the several hundred reporters here watching, and then millions of viewers around the world watch the astronauts on the surface of the moon. It's a very elaborate TV system throughout the manned spacecraft center, linked up through the communication system with the spacecraft itself, all three of them, the lunar rover, when it's on the surface of the moon with its own dish antenna beaming signals back, the lunar module, Orion, and the command module, Casper. That meeting is continuing. I see the focus of the activity is turned to another one of the controllers at the next console. Let me count heads again on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. About 9, one more man has joined the group. Flight Director Jerry Griffin is in charge of the landing effort. We can see the red hair of astronaut Stuart Roosa, who is the capsule communicator with Ken Mattingly in Casper. He's going to be relaying information to Casper as this discussion continues. Stu Roosa has his headset and his communications system on, and he's walking over to the edge of the group. He can talk to Ken Mattingly in Casper while he is on the edge of this little group of 9 or 10 people discussing Mattingly's problem in Casper. Jerry Griffin, the flight director, is right in the center of the group. The man in charge of this descent and touchdown part of the overall mission. We have several of these flight controllers working in shifts. That's Charlie Duke saying, yeah, that looks pretty good. He mentioned something there that's... How do you read Orion? His high-gain antenna apparently is locked back in again. About the time I said that, I think it went out. There are three shifts of these flight director teams. Jerry Griffin is in charge of this group. Then Pete Frank is in charge of another one. And Gene Kranz has been in charge of a couple of teams. He's passing the third team over to Phil Schaffer, a man that we have known for quite a while as one of the flight dynamics officers, one of the men down in the trench, who knows a lot about the guidance and safe navigation down to the surface and back. Well, Phil has been promoted to a flight director now, the third one of the men we will hear out being in charge throughout all of this mission. Right now, however, it's Jerry Griffin's problem is to help figure out how to alleviate the problems being experienced by Casper.
Wonder if there's any possibility of an answer on we're going to do a P-52 and get ready for another PDI. Over.
That's John Young in Orion. He's asking, should I do another star sighting and get ready for another descent and touchdown as when we come around again? That's what that one little sentence meant. Shall we do a P-52, that's a star sighting, aligning his navigation system with the stars, and get ready for, do a P-52 and get ready for PDI again. Get ready for powered descent initiation again. I don't believe Mission Control answered him. They should have passed across the landing site by now, and I believe they've been in an adequate attitude possibly to give a look down below.
You can go ahead with your P-52, John. We're thinking of having you all try to get back closer together on the back side. If you're closer to the approach, you could have some more words to be on that. Later we decide for the PDI, then we'll have another procedure.
Well, that's hard to hear. That was the capsule communicator saying to John Young that he would like for him to possibly get a little closer to the command module when they're on the backside of the moon where they can't be tracked. In other words, someone has expressed some concern over the possibility. Since they are both in this low-sweeping orbit, just a few kilometers apart now, they would like to make sure that they are, when they are out of tracking range, when they are behind the moon, away from communication with Earth, that they are adequately separated or that they're close enough together that they can see each other. And by seeing each other, then they can make sure that they don't come back together accidentally. That was transmitted through a lot of interference.
This is Apollo Control. There's a rather busy huddle around the flight director's console here in Mission Control. As all the options for the current situation in the mission are considered, shall we continue trying to troubleshoot the problem with the command service module stabilization control system? Or shall we proceed with re-rendezvous and a trans-earth injection burn at several hours hence? The possibility is still open for troubleshooting and fixing the problem with the system that controls the service propulsion system and just landing at a later time. We are hopeful that before loss of signal on this 12th revolution of Apollo 16, that the decision will be made. At 98.46, this is Apollo Control.
It will take about 30 minutes for the two spacecraft to reach what is called LOS, or loss of signal, before they go behind the moon. And as you just heard there, obviously it would be good if they could figure out what was wrong in order to give the appropriate instructions to Ken Mattingly in the command module before he goes out of communication during the backside pass, which lasts from 30 to 40 minutes. The man you hear talking to the lunar module, to John Young and Charlie Duke, is Jim Irwin, who was the lunar module pilot on Apollo 14. He landed on the surface of the moon with Alan Shepard, and they examined the Fra Mauro Highlands part of the moon, two missions back. Once one of these astronauts has gone to the moon and used these sophisticated bits of equipment, every effort is made to use him on future communications teams in the Mission Control Center, unless he is assigned to another flight and is in training for another space mission. Every effort is made to utilize this experience by the astronauts who have gone in talking to their cohorts, their companions, when they go on another mission. So we will hear a number of these astronauts who have flown in space. As I mentioned a moment ago, Stuart Roosa is at the moment talking with Ken Mattingly and on another communication circuit as they're troubleshooting what may be wrong with the command and service module stabilization control system. This is part of the inertial guidance system, the gyro-driven system in the command module, which has to be working properly before rocket maneuvers are carried out. Some of the other astronauts who are working with these men right now, Fred Hayes, who was on Apollo 13, Ed Mitchell, Ed Mitchell was on Apollo 14. Jim Irwin was on Apollo 15, the last mission to the moon, to the Hadley Real Area, with Dave Scott. Ed Mitchell, who was in there with him, was with Al Shepard to the Fra Mauro Highlands. You're listening to the Voice of America's coverage of the flight of Apollo 16. We've been preparing for the descent and touchdown to the surface of the moon. If you just tuned in the last few minutes with us, you may well be aware by now that the descent and touchdown has been delayed at least one revolution of the moon. That means another hour and a half.
Spacecraft communicator Jim Irwin in the next few moments should pass up to the crew of Orion what the current thinking is here in the control room on attacking the problems that have arisen in the Apollo 16 mission.
That was Terry White, the voice of Apollo Control at the moment. I thought he was going to come back with a bit more information. I see that part of the meeting has broken up in Mission Control, where the flight controllers are discussing the problem. Flight Director Jerry Griffin at the center of this group of 8 to 10 men. The little group has somewhat dissipated, and we assume that in the next minute or two, they'll be giving Ken Mattingly some instructions on what to do in the command module. And also they will discuss with John Young and Charlie Duke what may be done in planning for another attempt at the descent when the spacecraft comes around the side of the moon. About an hour from now, 26 minutes until loss of signal, until both of these spacecraft, still in orbit together, relatively close together, go behind the moon out of touch. To summarize what happened initially, the lunar module disconnected, or the Orion disconnected from the command module and prepared for descent and touchdown with Charlie Duke and John Young aboard. Then Ken Mattingly, while preparing to put his mothership spacecraft into a circular orbit back up some 100 kilometers above the surface, reported that the stabilization control system, a part of that called the thrust vector control, didn't look quite right to him. He did not believe he should fire off the main rocket engine to move his orbit back up to that 100-kilometer circular orbit. Well, this would prevent the mothership, Casper, from being in an appropriate abort position should the lunar module run into trouble on its descent and touchdown. Therefore, the lunar landing by Orion has been delayed for at least an hour and a half for one revolution of the moon, which takes just about an hour and a half. That, in essence, is what has happened up to now. We're expecting a discussion with the astronauts as mission control, the engineers, the flight controllers, decide how they are going to remedy the problem in the stabilization and control system. You've heard us talking about John Young, the commander of this flight. He's the man who is in charge in the lunar module. He will be the first man to step onto the surface of the moon when Apollo 16 does get down there to the surface. This is his fourth mission in space. And before he took off from here on Earth several weeks ago, I talked with him, and here's a recording of that conversation about the man himself. The commander of Apollo 16, John Young, has flown three times before. This is going to be your fourth mission. John, I suspect you're going to have some of the highest hours in space, longest hours in space of all the astronauts by the time this program ends, won't you?
No, won't be Jim Lovell, Rhett. He'll still have the most, and I guess he's welcome to them. But I really have enjoyed my last three space flights, and I think this one is really going to be really a premier type flight to the highlands on the moon. I think we're going to see some things that nobody's ever seen before close up, and I think some of the data we're going to be able to bring back are going to send scientists back to their drawing boards again. I think it should be really interesting.
You're going to have to go some to top the site that Scott and Irwin saw.
Oh, yeah. Well, once you get up close to the some of the areas that we're going to, I think it'll be tough to tell the difference between our mountains and their mountains. Theirs were a lot higher, but ours are pretty high, and we'll be a lot closer to them.
John, just for our audience overseas and for the many people listening around the world, tell us just a bit about yourself. In fact, all of this crew is from the deep south in this country, so we'll hear southern drawls all the way down the line this time, won't we?
Oh, yeah, everybody talks like they have a mouthful of grits. It's going to be pretty bad.
You grew up in Florida, right?
Oh, yeah. I was born in San Francisco, but at the age of two, I was transported to a little town in Georgia and lived there till I was six, and then moved to Florida and went to high school in Orlando, Florida, then moved back to Georgia to go to college in Atlanta and
Georgia Tech.
Yeah, Georgia Tech, right.
And aeronautical engineer?
Yep, that's right. And after completing that, I was assigned to a destroyer in the Navy.
Did you get to flying in the Navy through ROTC in college? Is that what led you to the Navy and flying?
I had an NROTC scholarship at Georgia Tech, and when I graduated, I was an ensign, and they sent me to a destroyer out in San Diego, and we stayed on there for a year, part of the time we spent in Korea, and I was very pleased to get those orders to flight training, finally.
Yeah, and you didn't fly much off of a destroyer, for sure.
No, you don't fly much. You go up and down and around a lot, but you don't fly very often.
Did you fly in the service? What airplanes did you get into?
Well, I fortunately ended up in jet fighter planes and made a couple of cruises off the Coral Sea when it was a straight deck, the USS Coral Sea, flying F-9, F-8 Cougars. And that was back in the old days. They don't even call them that anymore. And then we got the F-8 U Crusader, which they call the F-8As, I guess they were.
Mm-hmm.
And we made a cruise in the Mediterranean on the USS Forrestal. And were flying off that ship both day and night with a 1,000-mile-an-hour jet fighter. It was a lot of fun and a really good experience. After I finished that, I applied to go to the test pilot school, a Navy test pilot school. And
I have no MTBC. I'm going clockwise on the translation and controller. Mark it. I still have no MTBC. I'm bringing on the pitch 2 gimbal. Mark. I'm checking the thumb wheel down to 0, up to 1, back to 1/2. The yaw thumb wheel is going over to 1, and let me try it again. There it goes. Didn't have a motor on, turning it off.
The communication system has been switched from the lunar module to the command module, and we're listening in now on the discussion with astronaut Ken Mattingly on what the troubleshooting effort is underway to help him solve the problems in the command module. Let's listen to this with Ken Mattingly.
It oscillates, and now it's diverging, and I'm turning the gimbal motor off. I'm going to hold in this configuration.
Roger, copy.
Ken is reporting to Mission Control. He's describing the configuration of the spacecraft, the instruments he saw, everything that he's been able to analyze so far in the command module. Another 18 minutes of conversation is possible before the command module and then the lunar module, just a few meters apart, maybe a kilometer or two apart, separate, and or as they are separated, go behind the moon. The discussion is continuing in Mission Control. Let's hear the rest of this conversation with John Young.
And went to test pilot school, where I was fortunate enough to be in the same. My instructor was Pete Conrad, and I went to work when I got out of the test pilot school for Jim Lovell. And so we're all about in the same boat, and then we were picked for the same group of astronauts back in 1962, which I guess is a long time ago. And
you've had a lot of action under the bridge since then.
Yes, we were really fortunate, and we were just getting into the program before the Gemini program started, and before they even could spell Apollo.
You flew with Gus Grissom and the first man, Gemini 3, right?
Yep, Gus and I flew Gemini 3, and then...
you and Mike?
Right, I was fortunate enough to back up Gemini 6 with Wally and Wally Schirra and Tom Stafford, and then was myself and Mike Collins were on Gemini 10, and after that, Tom Stafford, Gene Cernan, and myself backed up the Apollo 7 mission. And then we were assigned to the Apollo 10 mission, and were lucky enough to get to the moon. And then I got to be.
You guys first orbited the moon there, and then the LEM went down low just before Armstrong and Aldrin landed it. I'm refreshing our listeners' memory.
Just a couple of months before Apollo 11.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I was assigned on as backup commander with. Jack Swigert and Charlie Duke on Apollo 13.
Mm-hmm. And then on to the prime crew for Apollo 16.
With Ken Mattingly and Charlie Duke. I'm really proud to be flying with those guys because I can't tell you how nice it is to be working with a bunch of professionals. Of course, I've been in this thing since almost the first day. But Ken and Charlie are really sharp, and they really know their vehicles. Ken knows the command and service module inside and out. He's been working with the sim bay since the first day it was invented. Charlie knows the lunar module inside and out, and he's been working with the rover since its inception.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much, John Young.
Hours and 1 minute around elapsed time. Flight Director Jerry Griffin is instructing the two spacecraft communicators to brief the crew on the current situation, in which apparently we have as long as 5 lunar orbits to make a determination on the feasibility of continuing with the landing, or whether we will have to rendezvous with the two spacecraft back together and do an immediate return to Earth, assuming that the service propulsion system would be inoperative. We're some 14 minutes away from loss of signal.